Welcome to the CDC Insight Podcast. CDC is the UK's development finance institution and impact investor. And in this podcast series, we share some of the highlights from one of our recent Insight events. These events aim to share practical lessons on private sector investment and development based on our experiences, knowledge, and research. So joining us today as we discuss COP26 and what emerging economies need from it, we are delighted to be joined by the Mayor of Freetown in Sierra Leone, Yvonne Akisoya. And Yvonne is joined in this episode by your host, CDC's Director of Communications, Lindsay Taff. Now, before I hand you over to Lindsay and Yvonne, I will just say that this event was very sadly cut short due to an unexpected fire alarm in our office where Lindsay joined the event from. And although we didn't cover as much ground as we would have liked, we did have enough time, though, with Yvonne to hear her perspectives on COP ahead of the summit. So here's Yvonne Akisoya in conversation with Lindsay Taff.
Lots of world leaders gathering in Glasgow next week from politics, business and civil society, all looking to address the climate emergency and look for solutions towards that. I've been delighted to see the amount of focus, media and events that have all been going on in the run-up to this, and I'm really pleased that you've chosen to join us here this morning. And I think you've made an excellent choice because we have with us today Mayor Yvonne Akisoya. She is the Mayor of Freetown in Sierra Leone, and she is a passionate climate campaigner. One of the things that Mayor Akisoya is great at is not only raising the alarm about the climate emergency and talking about what different cities and countries need, but also inspiring others to focus on solutions and follow her lead. So, for example, in Freetown, she has inspired the residents at a time where the world has seen unprecedented flooding and fires, and Sierra Leone and Freetown has been affected by floods too. She's inspired them to plant over the next 2 years 1 million trees. She will be speaking in COP26 in Glasgow herself, and she was elected vice chair of the C40 Steering Committee, which is a group of 97 cities that are all focused on addressing the climate crisis. She has been featured on the 2021 Time Now list. She is also on the BBC's 100 Women 2020 list. I could go on, I won't. She's got an incredible CV, but I'm sure you'd all much rather hear from Mayor Akisoya rather than me. So good morning, welcome.
Good morning.
Thank you for joining us this morning. You're best known for your Transform Freetown plan, which climate change is obviously at the heart of. Could you tell us a bit more about the plan and what progress you've made against it?
So thanks very much. And Transform Freetown is how we've described our three-year plan to really address the challenges of our city. So a little bit of background. I wasn't a politician, never been in politics before, never been in public sector, but made this decision about 9 months prior to the election, primarily driven by a desire to have our city clean and to protect the environment. We live in an absolutely beautiful setting, the Atlantic Ocean on one side and mountains with forests surrounding the city, which is kind of nestled in between. Over the course of the last 10 years, increasingly, but really probably starting about 15 to 20 years before, that landscape is being destroyed. The trees have been, the hills have been deforested. The coastline has been damaged because climate change is impacting not only the city, but also the rural areas. In a country where 65% of the people are subsistence farmers, the impact of irregular rainfall, of flooding, you know, of literally having the rain come when it shouldn't come and not come when it should, has meant that there's been that's not the only factor. It's one of the factors, but there's been a significant increase in our city's population. And people have moved into the city looking for places to live, damaging the natural environment, but also making themselves more vulnerable. So Transform Freetown is a comprehensive plan to address what those underlying challenges, but really also the symptoms as well as the cause. So that means we look at four clusters: resilience, human development, healthy city, and urban mobility. And within those four clusters, we look at 11 priority sectors, ranging from environmental management, coming through to job creation, to health, to sanitation, to water, to urban mobility itself. It's both a cluster and a sector of how people move around the city. And with all of this, we have at the heart of it, an inclusive approach. So having community at the heart, data-driven, performance-led, and for, you mentioned Freetown, the tree town, which is the plan to plant a million trees, the plan which is under implementation. And so coming out of those 11 priority sectors are 19 specific targets. By meeting those targets, one of which is increasing vegetation cover by at least 50%, translates then into initiative like Freetown, the tree town. But each of those 19 targets have between 3 to 4, giving us a total of about 37 specific initiatives, the sum of which, working together with partners and the residents of Freetown, will, by God's grace, lead to the transformation that we desperately need in our city.
What are you hoping for from COP, and what do you need for others to do to step up on this?
That's a question that needs to be answered on a number of levels. The first one is recognizing a recognition of the inequity, which pervades so much of, you know, of the world, from trade to migration challenges to brain drain, so much. But in this particular context, as we talk about climate, we have this imbalance where the major emitters have more resilience to deal with, because we are all experiencing the impact of climate change. We've seen the floods in Europe, in China. We've seen as well the fires. So we know that it's happening everywhere. But the question is the resilience. It's having the systems in place, the resources in place to be able to withstand and rebuild very quickly. In contrast, with a continent that's emitting 0.55%, the impact is severe because the resilience isn't there. And so that's one piece, just recognizing and understanding that we have this disparity. The next issue then is really also when it comes to the difference between how you approach this from the perspective of a nation state and a city. And that's very important for all cities across the globe. But in the global south, it's even more of a challenge, because structurally, you invariably have more restricted mandates and less access to capital. But the impact is always felt on the ground. And I often say that across the world, every piece of soil that you're standing on is within the context or is within the jurisdiction of a local authority. It's obviously within the jurisdiction of a nation state as well, but the local authorities are closest to the people, and they're the first line responders. And if they don't have the access to the financing for mitigation and adaptation, and if they don't have the political mandates to enable this work to be done quickly, then the people who are the residents of those local authorities, the citizens of those nation states, are made more vulnerable, and the losses greater, and the chances of recovery are slimmer. So what do we need? We need an appreciation of the imbalance. We need a recognition between global north and global south. We need a recognition that cities are at the forefront, and they need access to finance, and they need the political and the regulatory space to do this work. But finally, we also need to know that it's not one size fits all. And that should already be clear from what I've said before. And when it comes to these conversations about a green just transition, we have to recognize that some people are transitioning, some people are on a development trajectory, and that should not be stopped because of climate actions, for which the big emitters are still not being true to their word. We need action now in terms of reducing the greenhouse gas emissions in order for us to meet the 1.5% target. But that action should not be at the cost of the development of those who are not the big emitters.
Do you think richer nations currently fully appreciate that?
When you're in the playground, and a big kid has the ball, it's very hard for the little kid to get the ball. And as I said earlier, this imbalance is something which permeates so many aspects of the international frameworks and the systems within which we all exist and grow. The big kids have the ball. And when you talk about equity, I mean, let's just take COVID as a classic example. So much was said about vaccine equity. So much was said in advance, whilst the vaccines were still being developed, of making sure that we recognize that we're not going to succeed with eradicating COVID or really controlling COVID if there are huge percentages of the world's population that may remain unvaccinated. And what has happened? This is precisely what we've seen with countries going on to boosters when other countries have not had access even to the first doses of the vaccine. Now, I think what's important for us all to note with, I don't think it's that it's not been heard. No, I don't think so at all. Because these conversations, like with the COVID vaccinations, are being had right across the globe. They're being had at the UN, they're being had within the Bretton Woods institutions. They're being heard. This is a question of choice. And as I said, when the big kid has the ball, sometimes it takes something outside of the decision that kid is going to make for them to decide, okay, let's all play, because if not, the teacher is going to come and take the ball away and then no one's going to have the ball. And what we have with this climate emergency, the expression leave no one behind, very well utilized. It's all over the place. How real is it? Not very. But then again, here we were 30 years ago talking about climate emergency. And 30 years on, all we've seen is emissions increase. During the COVID, the worst of the pandemic, we all spoke and cities really led the clarion call. We need a green, just recovery. I saw data recently that seems to indicate that our post-COVID, post-pandemic emissions have actually exceeded 2019. So are we not hearing the choices that are being made every day? So this question of where the emerging economies are vis-a-vis, you know, the big emitters and decisions around how we ensure that we actually do address the climate crisis in a way which does not stymie the already stymied and challenged growth of billions of people on this planet. It's the same, we need to be addressed in the same way that we address this question of, are we really going to keep on going in this decade, which is declared to be our last opportunity? Are we really just going to keep on going without making the necessary policy adjustments? So far, not so good, based on the data.
A big thank you then to Yvonne Akisoya for joining us today. And if you want to find out more about our presence at COP or our Insight program of events, articles and podcasts, there's links to both of these in the episode notes in the podcast description. That's about it from us today. Thanks again for listening. We'll be back with a new episode very soon.